Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone.
Hi,
you want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in storiesforchildrenmagazine.org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the world of ink.
Good evening, everybody. This is your host, V.S. Grenier, on the Stories for Children show here at the Future World of Ink Network on Blog Talk Radio. It is Monday, March 19th, and it is 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific. I have to, like, do the calculation in my head. It's terrible. But we are doing our show a little bit later than we normally do on Mondays due to our guests this evening, but we will get to them in a second. I just want to go over quickly some of the lineup here at the World of Ink Network. We actually had on this last Saturday the Another Anything Goes with Bennett Pomerantz. That's a two-hour show where it's kind of a panel discussion with authors and, of course, the host, Bennett Pomerantz. We didn't know about that show, so it was a last-minute posting. So if you didn't see it earlier in the week and missed it this weekend, it is up in our podcast under the on-demand episodes, you can catch that. That's always an interesting show. It kind of is a show where authors get to unwind and share more than just about their books, but anything in the writing industry and just their own personal hobbies. So definitely check that out. And then this coming Thursday at 4 p.m. is Book Discussion with Fran Lewis. That's always an engaging show as well. Her guests are to be announced, so I can't tell you who's going to be on that show. And then Irene Roth is back here on the World of Ink Network, and she will have her show on May 28th at 4 p.m. Eastern, and she will be talking about the importance of empowering teens. So those are the shows that we have lined up here at the World of Ink Network. And I just quickly want to thank Blog Talk Radio again for having the World of Ink Network as a featured network here, and we're always grateful to their support. So tonight is the Stories for Children show. We're actually doing the show a week early than normal. Usually this is a once a month show on the last Monday of the month. But due to my son graduating, which I've talked about many times over the last couple of weeks here at the World of Ink Network, I moved the show up by a week since I will be busy and Memorial Day weekend is the on Monday, and it's the last Monday of the month, so I figured everybody would be enjoying the holidays, too. So that's why we moved it up a month. And I'm excited about today's show because I, on Sundays, guest blog, and I don't do every Sunday, hit and miss when I have time, but I guest post on a blog called Utah Children's Writers Blog, and I have two of the other bloggers with me on today that are also writers here in the Utah. I don't know, I guess not Utah Valley because you guys are in various parts of Utah, but we're scattered throughout Utah. So I have Scott Rhodes joining me and Julie Dane. So welcome to the show. It's nice to have you guys here.
It's nice to be here.
Thank you.
So I just kind of would like you guys both to share a little bit about your backgrounds. I know we have your bios posted, and Scott, I know you emailed me later today and said, oh, I guess I really need to update that. It's been a while. So we'll have Julie go first and then use Scott to kind of share who you guys are and your background. So go ahead, Julie.
Okay. My name is Julie Dane. I live in Utah, and I'm an author. I've got two books out. They are both young adult books. And I developed my love for reading and literature, first of all, as a young child, just reading and falling in love with all the great books of that time, which were like Anne of Green Gables and all those Black Stallion books. And then later when I lived in England, I really developed a love for English literature and the whole English. I guess I'm an Anglophile. I studied at BYU. I actually majored in zoology. That has nothing to do with writing, but that's my biography, I guess.
And how about you, Scott?
Well, I'm a transfer to Utah. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I've come back and forth to Utah a few times. I spent summers with grandparents here for a couple years. I went to college in southern Utah, and I now work for Adobe in Lehi, Utah. I was transferred out here with a previous employer close to 20 years ago, so I've been here for a while. I'm a technical writer for Adobe. I started out as a technical writer back in 1988 working for Atari. And like Julie, it's been a while. So like Julie, I developed a love for books and stories and words at a young age. I used to make, probably when I was about 5 years old, I used to trace pictures out of books and make up stories to go with them. I learned to read fairly early, and so I was able to make up simple stories back then. I don't have any published books out. I'm working on a third manuscript right now. I have published in the technical area. I've published a couple of poems, and a couple years ago I had an article published in the Writer magazine.
No, I know you've been in the trade part of it, published, and I know all three of us have been, both bloggers, all of us have been bloggers on the Utah Children's Writers Blog for a number of years, so it's actually fun to have the three of us on here, since, even though we all know each other, we've seen our photos up on the blog site, to actually get us all on the phone and talking, it's fun because, I know I've been up north, but I don't always get to see a lot of get to meet in person a lot of the writers that I've known in the community just via email and, that way. So it's fun having you guys both on here. And I'm actually a transplant to Scott. I'm a kindred spirit from California, but I'm from the southern half. I'm from the San Diego and L.A. County areas of California. But I have been to the Bay Area. I have family up there. Actually,
you're not a Dodgers fan, are you?
No, I'm not. I am a Lakers fan. Basketball was my thing. I'm a huge Lakers fan. It's funny because everyone's like, oh, you must love the Raiders because you're from L.A. I'm like, no, actually. And then they're like, oh, the Chargers because you went to school in San Diego. I'm like, no, I actually like the Dallas Cowboys. And I've never lived in Dallas in my whole entire life or Texas. I've visited, but I've never – but, yeah, no, the only L.A. sports team I've ever supported is the Lakers. So, no, I've never been a baseball fan. And all my family plays baseball, believe it or not. I actually have, which is going to say, my cousin, Greg, who is from Santa Rosa, played for the A's. He was in their minor league and then as a pitcher and then helped with a fill-in pitcher for the majors when, because they have the relief pitchers that come in. And so he did that for a number of years. He doesn't do it anymore. But so I did support the A's for a while.
Well, that's good. That's the right team to support. I'm kind of that way. I'm kind of that way with basketball because my uncle coached actually at the Olympic level. Uh-huh. And I have a nephew who coaches now here in Utah. But I never really got into basketball, much to the chagrin of my junior high school basketball coach, because I was 6 feet tall in seventh grade.
Oh, wow. Well, that's fun. I think it's great that you're on Adobe. I'm sure Marcia, when she, who's my partner here at the World of Ink Network, when she gets back from vacation, goes to the show and goes, wow, we have somebody, because, Adobe's such a big part of our lives. I always see Adobe popping up every time I'm doing anything that I have to submit stuff. It's so funny that you work for them. But, I'm glad that you and Julie are both on the show. So I would like to kind of talk about the Utah Children's Writers Blog because, if you live in Utah, obviously, and you write for children or young adults, most likely you've heard about the blog. But I'm sure a lot of our listeners that don't live in the beautiful state of Utah are going, what? There's a blog for Utah children's writers, and there is, and we share on there I mean, I know in April we have the 30 days, 30 stories, which is always a fun little promotional thing we have going on. But there's tips on there as well. I'm just kind of curious, you know, for people who want to be writers or aspiring writers, but which is so funny, I've never asked when I was actually asked to be a guest, blogger on there, I never asked who started the blog. I have no idea who actually created this blog. Is that horrible?
Well, I can answer that one. There's a Yahoo group for Utah Children's Writers, and it was discussed once, I don't know, however many years ago we started, that it would be a good idea to have a blog. And at that time, Sarah Sutherland actually started it, but from its inception, I've been the co-administrator with her. So although she was the first person to get it organized, we were, the two of us were probably the first people involved. And then Julie has been on since near the beginning, and she's done a really good job designing the visual look of the blog.
Oh,
as
and
well
I know
as
that
her
you did.
Posts.
I did not know that, Julie, that you were the one who was designing it for the visual look for us. And,
yes,
and I know, Sarah, I've actually
amateur designing, but
well, still though, I mean, to take on that task, trust me, I do websites. I actually do our World of Ink Network website, and that's the first time I've actually admitted that on the air, so now people know. I'm the one who actually does our website for the World of Ink Network, and I'm like, I am not a pro. I did not go to school for that. I didn't even go to school, by the way, Julie, to be a writer either. My background is fashion. That's why I lived in Southern California. I am an ex-buyer. I used to go to fashion shows. That was my old life. Before 10 years ago, so, but I've actually met Sarah. I've met Sarah Sutherland at a few of the SCBWI, which is, for those who don't know, the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, at a few of the conferences. So her and I have met, and I did not know Sarah was the one who started it. I remember her, she was the one who invited me to be a guest blogger to the blog, but I didn't know she was the one with you, Scott, that actually kind of got it going. So what's the premise? What's the idea behind the Utah Children's Writers blog? I mean, because I know there's a lot of us who get, you know, who do the, you know, have a day that we can post a blog post, and generally I focus usually on like interviews with authors or some type of event that's happening in Utah. So, you know, those of us all around the state know about it. Yesterday on Sunday, I posted about today's show. So I do more of that kind of posting, and so far no one's yelled at me for it. I'm just kind of curious, what else is, because I mean, I've seen everybody do different kinds of things, so I'm just kind of curious what the main goal is. And this is so horrible to say this as a guest blogger, but, what is the whole goal of the blog in general?
Well, I think the primary goal is just to help create a sense of community among Utah writers. But in a sense, that's kind of, the name works against us, because I don't think we really post very much that's specific to Utah or even really to children's writing. I think the blog benefits anybody who writes or wants to write, no matter where they're from. So I worry sometimes that having that as our title is
right.
Chasing some potential people off.
And that's why I kind of wanted you to share, because that's kind of always been my impression when I've read the post from the various, you know, people who are on there. Because I've noticed that, you know, everybody kind of has a different spin. I mean, I've seen stuff from, you know, industry information to, you know, tips on how to hone your writing skills that you can use in any genre. And so I've never felt it was really specific to just children's and young adult writers by any means. I really felt anybody can benefit from it. And so our listeners know, too, I'm going to kind of share with you guys. By the way, if you ever want to check out the blog, it's a great blog. There's a lot of information there. It's utahchildrenswriters.blogspot.com. I'm curious, what got the, in April, the 30 days, 30 story kind of concept going? because that's really fun. I mean, that's where we get to, and I want to say it's not just those of us who guest host every month that get to do it. I think anybody can enter that, right, and share a story or a poem or.
Yes, anyone can enter that and share a poem, a story, some artwork that they have done, anything. In fact, one of my friends that I've sort of met through the online writing community lives back in, like, Kentucky or something. He actually contributed a story this past April as well. So you don't have to live in Utah. I agree with what Scott said, that it's a little bit of a misnomer because the blog benefits the writing community everywhere, even though the events that maybe are mentioned on the blog are more localized. But anyone can read it and comment and join in. And the 30 days, 30 stories is a great way to get writing from all over the country shown on the blog.
Yeah, and, I mean, we just had that. And, of course, those stories are, you know, and I love it because every day it's a, I mean, you guys are so good about that, where every day there's a new post up. I mean, literally, and that's so challenging. I mean, I remember when I was running my magazine, Stories for Children magazine, it was so hard sometimes where I was like, I don't want to say I was pleading, but at times I was like, you know, we still are open. And I see this, you know, with Cricket and from Highlight. Well, I guess Highlight's not so much. They have a huge archive now. But, you know, every so often you'll see, like, some of, like, the smaller children's magazines saying, we still are open to, you know, submissions. And I remember being like that. And so to have a blog, and this is just, you know, totally, you know, it's obviously it's free. There's no payment, but such a great way, especially for aspiring writers to say, you know, there's something in print that everybody can see and kind of a sample of the writing out there. To have every day pretty much a post is just fabulous.
It was a good example of the variety of writers we have contributing to the community because it wasn't all children's stories. In fact, there were only a few children's stories on there. We had military stories, we had religious stories, we had zombie stories, we had a graphic novel type story, we had poems.
We had a screenplay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a screenplay. I think somebody shared like a real, I guess it would be like a memoir type kind of story because it was an actual real event that happened story on there. I was one of the children's ones. I actually posted this year. I've never actually participated. This was the first year I actually did that. I actually had a story up during April because I'm always so busy. So when that month happens, I'm like, oh, good, a month off. I don't have to worry about trying to remember to post something.
Yeah, well, it's definitely one of the highlights of our year on the blog.
Yeah, no, and I think it's such a great idea. Have you guys ever, you know, thought about, you know, like a conference? Because I know quite a few of the guest bloggers there have, you know, been on conference committees in the past, and I've seen quite a few like blogs like the Utah Children's Writers Blog, where eventually they gain such a huge, you know, community and follower base that, you know, workshops and then conferences kind of spring from that. Is that something that could be in the future that we could see happen with this? Because, I mean, I know the community's grown quite a bit.
Silence.
Scott,
yeah.
You take this one.
You're like, Virginia, don't mention that, please. We don't need more work.
No, I'd love to see some kind of a conference or a gathering, even a summer picnic or something, where at least the people who are, you know, in this area could get together. We have a number of people who write or follow who are in southern Utah who, you know, that it would be a bit of a trip to come up here, but, you know, I'm definitely open to...
No big deal.
Yeah, but I'm definitely open to something if there is interest. In fact, once I just kind of put out feelers, I think it was last summer, about some kind of a get-together for the people on the blog and then invite some of the people who read it to come and meet us if they wanted to, but that never really took off. So.
Yeah. We do have people
who are... or have been involved in the blog, who are involved in things like LDS Storymakers and the WIFYR conference, and like Bruce Luck, who's one of the writers, has been pretty heavily promoting that conference that's coming up in June.
Yeah, I've heard from Carol Lynch Williams quite a few times about that conference. And so I've been sharing it down here in southern Utah, trying to get some of us up there. And you're right, I know it is a trek, but I always think, oh, you know, I guess being from L.A., I'm like, it's only 4 or 5 hour drive, not a big deal. Everybody looks at me down here, are you insane?
It takes that long to drive from downtown L.A. to Anaheim. So.
Yeah, so to me, I'm like, that's no big deal, it's a trek. I mean, because Marcia is actually is in Vegas right now, which is just, you know, literally an hour and a half south of me. And I keep telling her, like, well, just let me know when you have a second. When you're on vacation, I'll just jump on the freeway and come down. She's like, I don't want you to have to drive down. I'm like, it's an hour and a half. It's not a big deal. You're from Chicago. You should know it's, like, no big deal, Marcia. To
right.
And, you know, hour on the freeway, no big deal. There isn't, like, 5 hours sitting in, like, dead-stop traffic. But, no, I would love to see that happen. And I know you guys have so much going on up north. I mean, for us down here in southern Utah, I mean, we have the St. George Book Festival, which, you know, which is funded from the Humanities Council, which is statewide in October. And then we have, you know, some meetings down here. But I know lots of passions up there, so I think that'd be great to have something like that. I would come. I would drive it, so you'd get me from down here up there. But so I'm curious, because I know the blog started because of the sense of community, and that's one thing Marsh and I talk a lot about in our shows, especially when we do, like, writer tip shows or have, like, we've had on Kirkus Reviews, and, like, right now we're trying to get Kite Readers on, which is a big promotional site for e-books in the children's and YA market, since that's, you know, out of all the e-book genres, that's one of the hardest ones, especially for picture books, because kids, you know, want that print book to look at the pages versus looking at an e-reader. And we talk to them a lot. And the thing that seems like why people drop out of writing, especially in the children's and young adult market, is because it is challenging. It's a very isolated career to path take on, because, you know, it's not like you have 5 writers sitting in front of a computer typing on the keyboard, right? So I really feel like the sense of community is really important to writers. I mean, is there anything that you guys have learned being a part of the Utah Children's Writers and involved in the different things that happen in northern Utah that has helped keep you guys going, that, you know, is available out there for writers? Because I think a lot of new writers, aspiring writers, you know, a lot of people think that, oh, I'm just going to write a book, and they just set their computer, and then they realize, I don't know who to ask questions or who, you know, and then they get on the internet, and there's information out there, but they still feel like they're reading versus connecting with people. And that's what I loved about our blog is, you know, we're connecting not just with each other, but with those who are searching for information. So I'm just kind of curious, what information could you share with those getting into this industry? Because we want to see people continue writing, not to stop writing, which unfortunately tends to be the case. Most people don't stay in the industry.
Well, there's this misconception that writing for kids is easy. Even, you know, I mean, people think you can write this picture book, you know, which is a 500 words maybe for a long one, and, you know, that's easy, and you can make all kinds of money and become famous, and it's not that simple. There's a real art to writing for kids, especially. It's why, when I was in high school, I wrote a couple of stories for younger kids, and, you know, I thought it was going to be pretty easy. It turns out to be harder than I thought. So I concentrate mostly on older kids. I've got a middle grade, and the one I'm writing now is very firmly young adult. But I think you're right. The community thing is really important. And I don't know how I would keep going if it weren't for my writers group, which Julie's a part of. You know, I mean, they keep me challenged, keep me going, keep me from getting too frustrated when the writing's not going well. You know, and then just through the blog, getting to know more people, getting to see, you know, everybody has different ideas, and the more, we tend to be sort of a closed, compared to other states like where I'm from, we tend to be somewhat a closed culture in Utah. I mean, it's not really true, but that's the reputation. And being able to see that there's this whole variety of people out there writing this, just tons of different stuff at different age levels, and you know, I mean, that really helps keep me going. And you know, seeing people like Julie become successful, you know, you think, yeah.
She totally deserves it.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, you totally deserve it. But it's encouraging to say, you know, somebody I know, somebody who you know who I see in our writers group meetings, has made it. And I mean, really, I mean, if you can, then maybe there's hope for the rest of us. You know.
Oh, I fully agree. It was funny what you were mentioning. I was thinking of like when I first started getting into writing, which is how I even, you know, came across you guys, is it was actually through the Yahoo group, through the Utah Children's Writers Group, because Rick Walton was one of our moderators for that. And somehow him and I connected through email. I don't remember if I contacted him or I had said something. He had sent me an email off to the side, you know, of encouragement or something. And I'd connected with him early on in my career, which is, you know, you guys probably know, I mean, basically like the granddaddy of picture books. I mean, he's just phenomenal. And from that, I got to know later on, early on in their careers, was Brandon Mall and James Dashner. And I remember going out when they were here in Southern Utah, you know, just launching their books, The Fable Haven and the 13th Reality series, you know, like the first, like, books were out, like book one of those series. And they were doing school visits, and my son, you know, they're up, both of them had come to my son's school, and so I had went to listen to them talk and said, hey, you know, let me take you out to dinner, you know, on my company bill, and, you know, just sit and chit-chat, and I'll get some of the writers here to come meet. And now they're both New York bestselling authors. I'm like, I kind of go, I wish I could be there too, but at the same time, I'm like, it encourages me too, you know. So I hear what you're saying, Scott, on that, because it is. I think when you build that community and you get to know other authors in your state and in your local area, you know, in your cities, you know, you get to cry and cheer each other on through the successes and, I don't want to say failures, but, you know, roadblocks of this industry. Is there anything you want to add to that, Julie?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say kind of the same thing, that one of the great benefits of the Utah Children's Writers blog and blogs that are similar to it is the way that writers can connect and share their stresses, the difficulties of writing, the things they love, the things they hate, you know, and they can ask questions to people who have already been through the same kinds of things that they're going through as we all progress along the road of becoming a better writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think even, you know, no matter what level you're at, I think you're always learning. I know for me, I am. Marsha and I talk about that a lot when we do our shows, and, you know, we have writers like you guys on our shows. I mean, we learn something new every single show. Marsha's been in this industry forever. She's actually a signatory agent out of Chicago, and she's a script writer, and she has a romance, and she has some children's books published. So she's been doing this for a number of years. I've only been in the industry for 10. But, I mean, I never walk away when I meet another author, you know, them starting out or, you know, major success, has made it to the New York bestseller list, without learning something and taking something away for my own self as an author. You guys talked about how you guys are in the same group. Is your writer's group, like, through your library? Because that's, like, the number one question I get asked when I meet somebody is, you know, how do I find a writer's group?
Yeah, that's the question I get asked a lot, too, is how do I form a writer's group? And there are particular writer's groups formed by one person just saying, I want to form a writer's group, and so they emailed out on this Yahoo email list that we've mentioned a few times and asked if anyone was interested, and a couple of us responded, and we ended up with an amazing group that has been a huge help to, I think, all of us in our writing to make us better writers. And that's one way to do it, is to send out an email on some kind of writers group email listing and just ask. Another way is to go to conferences where you can meet other writers from your area and organize that way. And Scott, for us, has been great to organize an online critiquing thing on Google Docs. So sometimes we meet in person, and sometimes we just post online. So I always tell anyone who's looking to start a group, they need to figure out, do you want to meet in person? Do you want a group of local people, or do you not care where they live? Do you want to be able to do your writing and critiquing online? You need to kind of decide what you're looking for, how many people you want in your group, and then just get yourself in the place, whether it's through email or blogs or through writing conferences, where you can connect with other people who might also be looking for a writer's group.
Well, I think that's a really great tip, for sure. And I know a lot of libraries tend to be really good about keeping track of different groups. I know here in Washington County, we have, I think, four now different writers groups. I mean, a lot of our members are actually in all of them, so they kind of
go to libraries. A lot of libraries support writers groups, large ones and small ones. For us personally, we have five people in our writers group, and for me, I feel like that is the right amount. If it were any more, I would feel a little overwhelmed in how many other people's things I need to critique, because if you're going to join a group, you have to commit to giving as good of a critique as you are hoping to receive. You have to be willing to put in the effort, or they're going to kick you out of your writer's group. So you have to consider that as well, how much time you're willing to devote.
Yeah, that's
right.
True, and I hear that a lot. What were you going to say, Scott?
Well, I was going to say that having the online option has really helped keep the group together and organized, because we're all busy, especially I've been in groups before that just fell apart during the summer because people are on vacations. They're out doing other things. It's hard to commit to meeting on a specific night every week or every other week or, you know, however often each group decides to meet. But the way we do it is, you know, we commit to meeting in person at least once a month, and sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes we have to go online that extra time. But we know each other well enough now after 3 or 4 years or however long it's been that we can meet online and get the same quality or sometimes actually even better quality critiques because of the amount of time you can give it when you're working on your own schedule. So it's been... I don't know exactly how Julie feels about this, but I think for me it's been really helpful being able to do both and to have the flexibility to meet however we need to, even at times when we're really busy. You know, or I go on business trips fairly frequently, and a lot of times those trips align with the week that we were supposed to be meeting. And, you know, we met once on Skype. It worked okay, but, you know, it's much better to be in person or just online.
Yeah, no, and I like the online thing because, you know, here with the Heritage Writers Guild, it's a group, you know, like a regular writers group where you get together and you have your monthly meetings. So the monthly meetings, you know, guest speaker comes, or as a group we'll just kind of have a conversation of what we'd like to see happen for the rest of the year kind of thing. And I've been the president in the past for the Heritage Writers Guild. But we have breakout, which is called Writers Improvement Groups, and one group's really small, which meets on Wednesday, and then there's another group that meets, well, they both meet on Wednesday. One's in the morning, one's in the afternoon. Obviously, the ones in the morning is because we have a lot of retirees. But we have the same problem with that group. It's huge. I think there's like 15 members or something that come to that one. Where the night one, it's like five. But we have the snowbird effect. So in the winter, we tend to get a lot of everybody from up north that doesn't want to be up there. But in the summer, they all go home because it gets too hot. And so I've seen where, like, we get really huge and we get really small. I'm starting thinking, wow, I never even thought about doing it dual where we can have some online stuff. That might help our group not get so fall apart in the summer. Because, as you guys know, we get over 100 degrees here in southern Utah, and you don't feel sorry for us anymore.
Yeah.
No, I lived in St. George for a while. You don't go outside until 2 in the morning.
it's so funny because like 9 months out of the year, I know everybody up north is sitting there thinking, oh, I wish I was in St. George at 75 and we're like at 30 or whatever. And then all of a sudden summer hits like, ha, ha, ha. You guys are 100 degrees, we're not. So, but no, that's a great idea, the online, because you're right. A lot of people do not get to sit at home and write all day long because most people have day jobs when they're trying to start off as writers. And that's a really great tip. Scott, and you mentioned this, that writing for children, especially picture books, everything's picture books are easy. I think they're like, I personally think they're the hardest thing to write. And I can say that being a published picture book author. I prefer my short stories and my manuscripts for novels more than picture book writing, because it's just you have to really watch how much detail and all kinds of stuff when you're writing those books. But what would you say is probably like the number one thing, and either one of you guys can jump on this, that somebody who wants to break into children's and young adult writing that they really need to consider outside of, you know, monetary gain, because we know that is basically laughable in those genres, unless you get like really lucky and become like a crossover book like Harry Potter, which is, you know, or like Twilight or something, because generally that doesn't happen. Other than that, what would you guys say is probably the toughest thing that people need to take into account they want to write in for these markets?
Well, it sounds obvious, but I think the first thing is you have to enjoy the genre. I'm surprised at how many people I hear say they're writing a kid's book, but they don't read children's books.
Oh.
And it's something that I have to remind myself to do because I, as an English major, I'm, you know, really drawn towards the classics and older books. But I love children's books, especially middle grade and young adult. And so, you know, I have to remind myself, put down the Beowulf and get out the Last Apprentice, you know, because it's all of these, there's great writing, I mean, really brilliant writing for young people, and a lot of people will think it's for kids, so, you know, it's probably not that great, but, I mean, really, I think right now the best writing that's going on is for kids, but if you're not reading it, then you probably should be writing something different.
Do you have anything to add to that, Julie?
Well, no, I agree with him. You've got to read in the genre that you write, but I also think it's important to read the best of that genre. It's easy to just start reading whatever's out there, and the longer I'm in the industry, the more of my friends are getting published, and I have to keep reminding myself, I've got to also read the books that are, you know, winning the awards, the National Book Award, the Schneider Book Award. You know, all these, if you read the really great books, it will help you improve your writing a lot. And I think anyone who is considering entering this industry, just, it's hard. It's hard to break in. It's hard to write. The market is getting saturated. Right now, middle grade is on fire, so that means in another year or two, middle grade books are going to be, it's going to be hard to get those published because they're just snatching them up right now so fast. Mm-hmm. So it's just a hard industry to break into, I think.
Yeah,
and you have
I
to do
agree.
It because you love it. You know, I mean, if you don't love it, life's too short to spend time doing something because you want to become rich and famous, especially something like writing where it's probably not going to happen.
And I think that's such a great statement because, you know, that's the one thing when I've had you know, authors on for this genre, which is obviously what the Stories for Children show is about. I mean, it's always young adult, middle grade children, picture book authors that we have on the show every month. And that's the one thing that I've noticed is every time I've had a guest on, they're always enthusiastic about what they're doing. They never sound blasé, ever. I mean, when they're talking about their books and what they're doing, I mean, you're just like, wow, you know, where can I go buy a copy? I mean, they're just, it's... They have that enthusiasm, and they're so inundated in what they're doing. They're not worrying. I mean, even if they are working on their other manuscript, if their book just got released, it's all about that book. I remember Brandon Mall telling me once when he was out on tour that when his book's released, that it's like, you know, being on the red carpet because you're just living and breathing that book, and you have to be all about that book. and the enthusiasm. And he's like, and it can't be like, you know, buy my book enthusiasm. He's like, it's talking with the kids and explain why, what you found exciting to write the book. And I think that's so true, because even like adult readers, where you can kind of tell them, like, oh, this is, this, you know, idea of my story, this is what my book's about or whatever, or, you know, they go read about it. You know, we kind of pick and choose. As adults, like, you know, and I think we're more forgiving, too, when we pick up a book, because we're like, oh, it sounds interesting, you know, I'll see what it's about. Whereas kids, if it doesn't have that, you know, I don't even know how to, that wow factor, and I hate saying wow factor because I know we hear that all the time in the industry, but literally it has to have that wow factor. I mean, where it's like when they're watching, I always think about like at Christmas time when all the toys are coming out and your kids are watching, you know, TV and they're watching their favorite cartoon or TV show, and all of a sudden the commercials come on and the kids run in the mom, I want this, come look. And it's because the commercial's like really loud and colorful and just like in their face. I think as authors, we have to be like that with those kids, because if we're not, they could care less what we wrote, you know?
Well,
so like,
and
that's what makes,
I think, writing for children such a reward, because anytime I get a fan, an email, or in fact, I just got one today from someone who said, oh, my niece, I gave my niece your book, and she loved it. She read the whole thing. She couldn't put it down. And then they'll say, I think it's the first book she's ever read cover to cover. I've had people tell me that numerous times. And for me, that is such a reward, because that's what I really want, to engage kids and get them reading, help them find books that they love and they just want to start reading. It, you know, to know that your book is making a difference in the life of a child or young adult is the whole reason, I think, why we as authors have decided to write for children.
I would love one of my stories to be some kid's favorite book, even if it's only his favorite book until the next one he picks up. You know, if during the time that he's reading that, he's saying, this is the best book ever, you know, I mean, that would be wonderful.
Well, and you guys are just nailing this perfect, because, I mean, honestly, I think that's why, you know, writers like yourselves are in this industry. It's not, like, again, it's not, like you said, it's not about the money. It's about getting kids reading. It's about getting them excited. It's about getting them to open their eyes to the world beyond, you know, their computer games and, you know, Twitter and whatever else they're involved in.
There's a lot of competition out there for kids' time and mental energy.
Yes.
A lot of competition.
Yeah, my son is a prime example of that. He's, you know, graduating. He actually graduates this coming Wednesday. It's crazy to think that it's like 2 days away, to see him actually going out into the world. And he's a huge video gamer. I mean, he grew up, no, unfortunately, he wasn't playing Atari. I do remember Atari, though, Scott, by the way. I had Atari when I was a kid. But, he's from the GameCube, when GameCube and the DSs were hitting the market. So, obviously, because he's 18. So that's always been his kind of thing, and PlayStation, and really into that. And now he's into, of course, all the online computer games that you can do, because PC is taking back over. So he's always on that. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, Dominic, you know, I wish you would read more, and there's more to just video gaming. And I remember when the Artemis Fowl series came out, and my son has never been an avid reader. But I love the Artemis Fowl series. Because even though Artemis is technically kind of like an anti-hero, he's also the antagonist of the story, because he causes, I don't know if you guys have ever read that series, but he's more of an antagonistic kind of character, even though he is the main character. And so I bought the book, and I gave it to my son, like, just check it out. It's not like a typical story, you know, where you have like this, you know, Harry Potter type hero, okay? And he started reading it. And because he fell in love with Ethan Coffer so much, Ethan Coffer had written, and I don't know if you guys know this, but he had written one of the books for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series. I can't remember if it was the very last book of it, after the author had passed away, the wife had lit, because Ethan Coffer is such a huge fan of it. It said, sure. So I bought that book for Dominic, because he liked Ethan Coffer as an author. And I said, by the way, there's a whole series which is by the original author, and my son read the whole entire series. And now he reads. And it just took that, and it was so great to see him move away from just video gaming all the time
yeah, and
to actually, like, picking up
hard.
A book and reading, you know? So, and I think that's what's so important as somebody who wants to get in this industry. You have to love kids, and I'm not saying you have to like other people's, you know, kids, because I never liked, and that's why I wrote my book, Babysitting Sugar Pop, because I hated babysitting kids. I was actually the nasty kid you didn't want to babysit. but I think you have to have that childlike mind and see the world through their eyes and have the love of wanting to share that world with them to do it, or I think you are going to flunk out in this industry because it is tough.
Yeah, and it's especially tough with boys because, I mean, I look at I have four sons, and none of them, well, one of them is a pretty avid reader. The other is not so much. But I look at even my own life, and I read all the time as a kid, but by the time I got up into 7th and 8th grade, I was too old for the kids' books. I hadn't yet discovered the adult books that I liked. I went through a couple years there where I wasn't reading very much and for me it was the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings that got me back reading. But I mean, there's so much, like Julie said, there's so much competing with their time. I mean, in addition to the video games and the TV and the movies and all of that, you know, for boys and girls now, you know, you've got sports, you've got, you know, here in Utah, there's a lot of church activities. There's everything is vying for that time and homework. You know, maybe you're lucky if you have an hour a day that you can read. And for that hour, do you want to do something that's sometimes difficult or brain intensive like reading, or do you want to sit down and let the TV come to you? I mean, there's a lot. So the trick is writing something that kids like, you know, and if we could find the answer to that one, we'd all be rich.
do you guys feel like, I mean, and I can say it, because I mean, I remember when I started 10 years ago, things that I learned when I went to the Institute of Children's Literature, that they, you know, said, oh, you need to make sure you do this, and you make sure, like the biggest thing I remember is, like, don't write multiple point of view. That was, like, a big thing 10 years ago. Like, you know, you can have single, you want to either be in first person, you know, single point of view, or you can maybe have like two characters that you flip flop back and forth, but you don't want to go more than that. And now all of a sudden you have like multiple character point of view, like almost like omniscient kind of writing style. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, do you guys feel like this industry, no matter how, every time you learn something, it changes so much, like every few years?
Thing about that, people ask this question to me all the time too. As they ask questions specifically, what kind of point of view should I write? Should I have a prologue? Are people liking prologue now, or are prologues out of style? You know, they ask that all the time. And one time when I was at a conference, I went to a class that was taught by an agent, Sarah Megabo. She's a pretty well-known agent, and people were asking her these same questions. And her answer, every time someone would ask her this kind of question, her answer would always be, is it well written? And I think that's really the bottom line. I think one of the reasons that people have started to shun prologues is because so many people started writing crappy prologues. But the bottom line is, if it's well written, then I think anything goes. That's really what you have to focus on, is making your story the best it can be, if that's multiple point of view, if that's single point of view, whatever. It just has to be so very well written.
Right. As the industry has trended more towards kids' books, you're seeing kids' books becoming really more literary, and it's that quality of writing that's the key. I mean, you see that one of my soapboxes is banned books, and you see that a lot. You see people saying that a book is not right for a certain age group. And sometimes it's not, but for the most part, it what it means is when the parents were 12 years old, kids were reading a certain kind of book that didn't have some of the kinds of details that maybe you might see in a kid's book now. Because you know, I mean, the quality of writing is amazing, and the kids who do read, since a lot of kids don't, the kids who do read expect high quality, you know, and they expect things that maybe talk about issues that they're seeing or their friends are seeing. And, you know, so issue books have become more important than just adventure books, which is sometimes hard for me to think of because my books tend to be more along the adventure line. But, you know, it's that everything is the quality of writing, and it doesn't matter how fun your plot is. If you don't write good characters, and if you don't use English well, and I don't just mean grammar, I mean, you know, creating a sense of magic with your words, then the kids aren't going to read it.
Oh, I totally agree with what both of you guys said. I love the fact that you brought up that how things are starting to trend more to a literary kind of, you know, way of style of writing, because I remember growing up, and I was a huge fan when I was in elementary school, the Choose Your Own Adventure books. Love those books. And then I also loved Because of Winn-Dixie, and I liked A Wrinkle in Time. Those were like the books I read, and The Black Stallion. I was a big fan of the Black Stallion series as well. But as I got older, I started noticing I liked more of that really super tight writing, which is when Harry Potter came out. And I've mentioned this so many times on my show, but I've actually read those books 7 times each. There's 7 books. I've read each book 7 times. I know, it's crazy. And it's that very super tight writing. And when Twilight came out, and I swear I think Stephanie Meyer one day is going to drive down here and shoot me, but... because I'm always ragging on her books. And it's not because I think she's a terrible writer, because I don't. I'm just not a fan of it, because it is. It's that very over-detailed, just very... And it's weird, because I love William Shakespeare. I love Conan Doyle. I'm a huge fan of Tolkien. And it is. It's that very, you know, long descriptions and just bogged down with way more information that you really honestly need in a story, because that's just the style of writing. And so I was never a fan of Twilight for that reason. I just couldn't read the book, so I was like going, because I wanted that shorter kind of tighter, fast moving kind of writing, like you're saying, Scott, that more action kind of writing, and Twilight is not. But I've noticed that is starting to pick up again with kids. They're willing to sit down, and because for a while, I know when I first got in the industry, like write tight, you know, kids, they, you know, shorter and medium length sentences, not long lengthy sentences. Kids don't have the attention span, and it seems as kids are starting to get more into writing, because all those books have recaptured their imagination, they're now being more open to taking the time to really sit down and read longer chapters than they used to. And I haven't adjusted to that yet.
Yeah. I think the thing is, and this kind of goes back a little bit to Twilight, I know that not everybody loves the Twilight books, and a lot of people like to give them a hard time, but I feel like any successful writer will be able to look at Stephanie Meyer's and those books, and even if they don't like the writing style, they should read at least the first book and ask themselves, what is it about this book that has made it so successful? What about this book speaks so loudly to the young adult readers? Because we can still all learn something, even if her writing is not as perfected as maybe we would hope. Anyone who wants to be a successful writer would look at books like that are so successful and ask themselves, what can I learn from this? Why is this book so successful? What about the way this story is told speaks to the readers? What is it about these characters that draws the reader into their lives and makes them feel like they really know them? We can learn a lot from Stephanie Meyer's books because they are so successful. There's a reason that they are so successful. And whether or not we love the writing or not, we can still learn from that.
Especially if you share her audience. You know, if you're writing to teenage girls, you know, I mean, she caught on. I mean, one of my stepdaughters was just totally in love with those books. And she reads fairly discriminately, but she loved those Twilight books, you know.
Yeah.
And even if you see yourself, as I do for the most part, as more of a writer for boys, because that's, you know, that's what I know, you still need to appeal to the teenage girls, because they're the ones who are reading. You know, they're the ones who are going to buy your books.
Well, and I love that I love using Stephanie Meyer, and I use her books for example, because I'm not a fan, like I said. I love it, and which is funny. It's not that I hate the storyline, and this is where I want to go with this. I love the movies. And I know the movies aren't 100% like the books. My mom's read all the books, and I go see the movies with her, and she tells me where it's all not how the book was written. So I do know that there's a huge difference between the two. But the core storyline of the Twilight series is in the movies. And that's exactly what you're bringing up, Julie, is, you know, you can learn from that. And what's funny, because it was written more for teenage girls, my, and I can say this because he's out on a mission, so he can't yell at me for bringing this up, and he'll never know. But my brother doesn't read either, and he's only a year and a half older than my son, so he's like my really little brother. And he actually read that whole entire series of Twilight. He loves the Twilight series. Which
yeah,
is really
it's
kind
hard
of funny.
To give a series. It's hard to yeah, give a series a bad review when it's so overwhelmingly popular and when it brought
right.
so many people, encouraged so many people and got them excited about reading. There's
yeah,
definitely something we can learn from that.
Exactly, and I actually asked my brother Trent, because Trent used to do before he left to go on a mission for the LDS Church. He did motocross, so I mean he's definitely a guy's guy. Okay, I want to make that very clear to the listeners. He's a guy's guy. He did motocross. I mean he's very much into the whole BMX bike racing. He's an ex gamer. That's what he does. He gets sponsored by Fox Sports. So I mean he's won awards and everything, you know, medals and trophies and stuff as an ex gamer. And so to find out he was reading Twilight, I was like, what? You're reading, out of all the books you can pick, you're picking Twilight? You know, you're a guy, what the heck? And I asked him, like, what is it about Twilight that got you to read? And Trent told me, and it goes right to what you're saying, you know, Stephanie Meyer does a fabulous job of character description. I mean, her detail to character, and I'm not talking like what a character looks like. I mean, the actual inside mind of her character, she draws you into her characters, all of them. I mean, you can vividly see those characters as living, breathing people where you can identify with them. And I was amazed by that. And she really, I think, identified, which is, you know, I think a hard thing, which goes right back to thinking like a kid. She really understood what teenagers were going through and how very dramatic teenage girls can be when it comes to guys and boyfriends and the drama of high school life and split parents. And that's what I could identify with, because I remember going through high school, having divorced parents, you know, having new siblings springing up, you know, with my dad and his new marriage, and trying to adjust to, like, you know, Bella, you know, she grows up with her mom. Her mom's getting married, and she's now shipped off to her dad, and her mom's going off living her life. I remember going through that with my parents, because that's what happened with my dad. My dad remarried. He was doing his thing. He was going boating and camping, and I wasn't a part of that. I was with my mom. And I was like, whoa, you know, my whole life just went upside down. And so I think you're right. I mean, though she was addressing in the storyline things that kids are dealing with nowadays. And I think that's very true.
Mm-hmm. Kids go through a lot these days, and anytime you can tell a story that helps them understand the things that they're going through and how to deal with them without being didactic, I think is really some. I think that's what draws kids in. They can relate, but they don't feel that they're being preached to. They feel like mm-hmm. they learned something without really realizing they've learned anything. And the stories stick with them. That always is what I judge to be a good book. It's when I'm done with it, the story is sticking with me, and I find myself still pondering and thinking about it. I think that's what makes good writing, and I think that's what makes kids and young adults want to read.
Right, and those stories that stick with you are usually the ones that deal with something difficult. I mean, romance when you're a teenager is a difficult thing, and when you happen to be a vampire or a werewolf, it's even harder.
Oh, yeah. Did you imagine?
Because, I mean, aren't we all vampires or werewolves? I mean, when you're a teenager, no matter who you are, you're an outsider somewhere, and you're not as cool as you want to be or whatever. You know, and that's what those books talk about.
Yeah, and you're right, and that's another lesson to take away from those books. If you're not a fan of it, is, you know, she used, you know, supernatural beings basically to show the awkwardness that teenagers go through. You know, because and I mean we're seeing that more and more now. I mean, especially now with kids being so into their smartphones and their tablets and communicating via technology versus actually in person, like how we all grew up, I think you have more of that social awkwardness more and more. with teenagers, and that was one of the big things I did notice with the Twilight series. I did read it, even though I wasn't a fan of it, that I picked up through that, is she really identified with that social awkwardness. Is there anything else that you guys feel that makes a good children's middle grade young adult book that, you know, people need to think about? I mean, to me, I pretty much read everything because I feel like, you know, even from, like, the worst written book out there that has, like, horrible punctuation and didn't look like it was edited and someone just slapped it together overnight and published it, you know, through a self-publisher. And I'm not saying all self-publishers do it. I'm just saying, you know, that they just, you know, found one that would do it. I still learn something from those books to improve my own writing, like what not to do. So I'm just kind of curious. I mean, what else do you think people can take away as writing? Because, I mean, I know as parents, they're always looking for, like, something to get their kids reading. I know I did with my kids. So what would you guys share on that?
Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to let you go first this time. Yeah, no,
it's a loaded question.
Well, I mean, I think the reason we didn't both jump in is it's a tough question to answer, because every kid's going to be interested in something different, and as a writer, you're not going to appeal to everybody, and trying to appeal to everybody is probably going to guarantee failure. But I have to judge it by what I read as a kid, and I read a lot of Hardy Boys stuff, and Hardy Boys stuff's not the most literary, and a lot of sports books, old sports books that also weren't, but they captured my imagination. I mean, one of the things that Julie can tell you, one of my fascinations is with the country of Iceland and the history and its literature and all of that. That love came from a Hardy Boys book where there was a mystery that was set in Iceland. I read that when I was probably 10 years old and have been fascinated by that country ever since. And so it doesn't, I mean, you just have to, there has to be something in your book that's going to capture somebody's imagination, make them see the world in a different way, make them see the world that they live in a different way. I look at, like, one of my favorite books as a kid was Harriet the Spy. My mom bought me that book thinking I was going to like it, and I put it on the shelf for probably several months because it was, you know, it was about a girl. I didn't want to read about a girl. And finally one day, I think I was sick and I was out of things to read, and I picked up the book and read it and just immediately fell in love with it. I mean, this idea of a girl who wants to be a writer, who's taking notes about everything she sees and getting in trouble doing it, it just really spoke to me, and that became one of my favorite books ever. Another one when I was a little bit younger, and this is one that's pretty much forgotten now, but it's still available. It's a book called The Enormous Egg, about a boy who lives on a farm, and his chicken lays this really big egg that turns out to be a triceratops that hatches from this egg. And it's got, you know, I mean, I read it again as an adult and realized, you know, there's political commentary and all of this stuff in there that completely was over my head as a kid. It's a middle grade book. But just that idea of, you know, what if a chicken gave, I don't know if you can say gave birth with a chicken. I don't know. I'm a city boy. But, you know, laid an egg that turned into a dinosaur, you know. I mean, that's something what boy's not going to like that, right?
Right.
And probably what girl.
What I liked about what you just brought up is that there was a lot of, you know, political stuff that was in that book, and it started making me think, like, of Animal Farm and Lord of the Flies. Because I remember reading those when I was in high school. And it's funny, when I was in high school reading them, I just, you know, read the stories, totally liked it. Like, you know, even the Huck Finn, you know, storyline. And I go back now as an adult and I read them, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how many social and economic, political things were tied into these books that, you know, and it goes back to what you're saying, Julie, where parents sometimes will read a book and give it a bad review because they feel like that's something that you know, shouldn't be in a kid's book. But here we were as kids ourselves reading books that were like that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's another one of the challenges of writing for this age group. Anyone who wants to tackle the, you know, children's and young adult literature genre, kids are smart, and they can pick up on stuff, even if they don't realize that they're picking up on stuff. And books that have layers and depth are the books that they love to read, the books like we've been talking about, the ones that stick with us our whole life. I mean, sure, we all pick up a fun read and reread it, and then we can't even hardly remember it, but kids are smart, and they can understand a lot more than I think some writers give them credit for.
And they want to be treated like they're smart.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
well, and here's a great example, you know, for our listeners. I mean, look at Dr. Seuss. If you go back as an adult and really look at all the books, and I'm talking about the ones written by Dr. Seuss himself, not, I mean, because there's a lot of books that have his name stamped on it that aren't written by him. But, you know, all of his, every single one of them has some type of political, and I hate using the word political message, but it does. It does have an overture of that in every single book, you know, be it, you know, world peace or, you know, social status, whatever. I mean, it's every single one of his stories. It's in there. There's some type of vein in there about what was, you know, that things that were important to him that were happening in the world that he wanted kids to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people, you know, because they are, those are very fun books. My girls love those books. My son loves those books. You know, here in our elementary school, they have Dr. Seuss Day. I'm pretty sure a lot of the school, you know, schools around the country do Dr. Seuss Day. And it's amazing if you really look at them, how many of them have some. I mean, we were just watching The Lorax the other day and then read the book, you know, after, you know, when my girls went to bed that night. And I'm sitting there reading it, sitting there thinking, you know, here's a big one right here all about, you know, our, you know, basically Greenpeace, you know, to some degree. Yeah, if you really think, look at The Lorax, it's all about our environment and helping to not destroy it. I mean, and this is for little kids.
Right, and earlier in his career, he was a little less overt about it, like in Cat in the Hat and Green Eggs and Ham, but you read those mm-hmm. and there's very grown-up messages. I mean, I think mm-hmm. the reason that he was so popular with kids is because he treated them like they were smart. He treated us like we were smart. You know, I mean, it's not, you're not reading it like a Dick and Jane book where it feels like it's being written down to you. He gave kids credit for being able to figure things out.
Yeah,
I always think of
the one, and I can't think of the name of the book, but it's the one with the where they have the stars on their belly, where one gets a star on his belly, so everybody wants a star on their belly.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that one? I can't think
of
the book. But I remember being in elementary school, and I remember on rainy days, because a lot of the Dr. Seuss books, you know, used to be made into a little short film. It's so sad they don't play those anymore. But on rainy days, they'd play those. And that was, like, my favorite one. And that was my favorite book growing up, even though I can't remember the name of it. But when I was in elementary school, I loved that book. I totally understood what that whole story was about, you know, about, you know, being different, and then everyone wanted to be the same, and oh my gosh, he has a star. Well, I want to be a star because I want to be different like him and stand out. And I was like, wow, you know, I totally got it. So I agree. I think that's probably one of the key things of what makes good books. And I think as adults we forget that. And I think sometimes we, you know, when our kids are reading books, we get sometimes judged. I remember when Harry Potter came out, and our parents freaking out because they were saying, you know, Wicked. Oh my gosh, we're teaching our kids, you know, witchcraft, and they're going to, like, you know, start practicing satanic worship. I'm going, really? Really, guys? Your parents are worried about this, not the fact their kids are, like, finding a book that's about, you know, getting them to read and using their imagination and seeing the world in a whole new way. Okay. So, I agree.
So many books, kids' books, the really successful ones tend to have a little bit of a subversive element to them. I mean, kids love that. I mean, look at Roald Dahl, you know. I mean, my kids who read were just completely enthralled by books like Matilda and, you know, James and the Giant Peach, and that's another one of my all-time favorites, Charlie and Chocolate Factory, you know, and they all have this weird, like, underworld almost in them that's just really strange. But the kids like that. I mean, the whole world is strange to them, you know, and they feel strange. And I mean, just a fourth grade classroom. What can be more stranger than that world, and more scary than that world? And they can deal with those things by the stories that they read, you know. And it doesn't have to be a story about a fourth grade classroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
No,
they can still relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And my daughter just finished reading the book Matilda, my 9-year-old. She just finished the Matilda book. And I'm like, oh, that's a movie, too. Of course, she likes the book better. But, you know, it's true. I mean, I think it helps kids understand, and using Matilda perfectly, because in the story of Matilda, I mean, it literally says in there that, you know, because her dad said, you know, you're a person instead of your, you know, child, she, of course, thought her parents could be punished. You guys remember that in the story?
Yeah.
And that's so true. That's what I think happens with us when we write children's literature and young adult literature, is we're empowering these children to realize that they are people, and they do have opinions, and they do have feelings, and they do have a different spin on how things are in the world, and that they have a right to speak up and to share that. You know, just because they're a child doesn't mean that what they see or feel or think is any different than an adult.
Or less important.
Right, or less important.
No.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's great. I would love for you guys both to share, you know, links where people can learn more about you guys and to follow you. I mean, obviously we did share the Utah Children's Writers blog, which is utahchildrenswriters.blogspot.com, where you guys, you know, post weekly on there as well. Where else can they find out more about you guys?
I've got a website, juliedanes.com, and I used to post there all the time, and now I'm lucky if I get something up once a month, but I'm trying. and you can, so you can read more about me there. I've got a longer bio, and I've got stuff about my books on that website as well, so it's juliedanes.com. And, of course, I'm also on Facebook and Twitter at Julie Danes. So.
Right, and I'm at scottroades.com. People tend to forget the A in my name. It's R-H-O-A-D-E-S. That website is pretty badly out of date. I really need to get to that and update it. But, you know, it has information about me, about the kinds of things that I write, about hobbies, you know, whatever. And I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, but I hardly ever use it.
Don't feel bad. I don't use my Twitter account very often either. I use the World of Ink one, obviously, but my personal one, yeah, I hardly use mine too. I am on Facebook though. Well, I thank you, Scott and Julie, for coming on the show. I mean, I really appreciate it. It's been fun having you guys on here and talking about just, you know, children's writing, what the Utah Children's Writers Blog does. I really feel it's important, you know, when writers like yourselves are willing to come on these shows and share this kind of information, because, I mean, even as readers, it's fun to kind of hear the back working of what writers do, because I think a lot of people think that we sit in front of a computer and just, you know, type out these stories and send them off to our agents and our, you know, editors, and we get published, and, you know. And
we're
that's
instantly
all,
and, famous and rich.
Yes,
right?
And we're instantly famous. We're over. It's so funny. I've had authors are like, you know, it seems like I was an overnight sensation, but I wasn't. I actually had all this other stuff published way beforehand that nobody even knew existed, because it just didn't take off like this one book. And, you know, it is a long road, and it is hard work, and I really feel like it's a labor of love what you guys do, more than anything, because I can't see else why you would do it, honestly.
Right, yeah. I was in a group once with somebody who was in there because he wanted to be rich. He wanted to make a ton of money, and, you know, I just think he was trying to do it the wrong way, because there are a lot easier ways to make money.
Yeah, writing is not the easiest way to make money.
But, no, I mean, when you look at how little most books actually earn and how much time it takes to write them, the amount of money per hour is definitely not worth it. You have to do it because you love it.
Right. It's not just the writing. I want to say there's the marketing and all the speaking engagements and all the other things that come along with it, right?
Right.
Yes, exactly. I feel like I mean, I'm not even published with a huge publisher, just a middle-level publisher, and I feel like I've taken a little hobby of mine and turned it into a full-time job. It's just taking so much more time than I ever imagined to keep up with my writing, and then the marketing, and then the going and doing presentations and all that. It's taking up a lot more time than I ever thought that it would to be successful in this industry. You have to be prepared to put in the time if you want to be a successful writer.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I actually have it in the beginning of my book where, you know, how you always have your dedication. And, of course, I dedicated my picture book to my kids. And then there's one line that says, I dedicate this to my husband and for his support for looking at the back of my head for all these, all these months. Because that's really what your spouses see is the back of your head for hours on end as you're at your keyboard typing away.
Well, they see the back of your head, and if you're talking to them, you're trying to figure out how you can work their gestures and their facial expressions and whatever into your story.
Yes, that's true. True. Knowing writers, you somehow end up in their storylines, right?
I'll be talking to my wife, and she'll look at me and say, "You're writing in your head while we're having this conversation, aren't you?" She's great with that.
Yeah, my husband has told me to never write a character that is based off him. He's like, "Lou, he's like, you pinky swear, right?" I'm like, "Sure, but you're," and as I'm pinky swear, I'm thinking, "But you'll never get off me mentioning on my radio shows." So I still get back at him because I mention him every so often on these shows. But thank you again, guys, for taking the time out today and coming on the show. I thoroughly enjoy it. I love reading your guys' posts on the Utah Children's Writers blog, and I definitely hope we can do this again sometime. And fingers crossed for you, Scott, that one of those manuscripts gets picked up and published for you.
Well, I've got Julie and my other group members kind of kicking me in the hiney, trying to remind me that I need to submit more often. So I'll be able to get it done.
Yeah, there's another thing that takes up all your time, all that submitting. That's the other thing people understand is you don't submit to one or two and, like, wow, you get published. It's like, 50, 60, 100.
Yeah,
not a submitting.
But it's been great talking to you. I hope people come by the blog at utahchildrenswriters.blogspot.com because I think anybody who's interested in writing at whatever level they're at is going to find something on the blog that will teach them something.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. And then you're welcome. And then I just want to let our listeners know that we have, in our on-demand episodes, Anything Goes with Bennett Pomerantz, that was on this last Saturday. And then this coming Thursday, we have book discussion with Fran Lewis at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific. And then on May 28th at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, The Importance of Empowering Teens with Irene Roth. And that's what we have lined up so far right now for the World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening, and have a great night. Bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.